today on the Inside Flap.
No, it's just me and Colin Firth. Oh my goodness. Oh. Since I saw Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy in the BBC adaptation, it's just love at first sight. He's my celebrity that I'm allowed.
Oh, he is. He's your...
Yeah, yeah. My husband's not
a beast,
so, yeah.
Wait, and what about your husband then?
I actually don't know who he is. Oh my God, that's terrible.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, it's but a one-way street, huh?
But no, that's actually good because then he can pretend anyone is his.
Oh, that's true.
There you go.
I think he's playing the long game there, yeah.
So today I'm backing up. And basically I'm talking like, how much space is there between the cab and the camper? 6 inches. Okay. So I keep cutting it. How about now? 6 inches. Okay. Now, I must have said this about a dozen times. And then, all of a sudden...
Oh, no.
So I got three kids sitting in the back seat.
Screaming, probably.
So what happened is, I had turned the camper sharp enough...
It was more that.
...that the back of the camper hit the back of the truck, exploded the entire rear window.
Whoa!
With the kids, got safety glass flying...
The Inside Flap is available on demand every week on iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and around the world on theinsideflap.com.
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to episode number 85. My name is Dave Medicus. Welcome to the show. Seated across the desk to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And across the snack shack on the floral patterned couch, love seat, sofa, what is that?
It's a settee.
A settee. Resting comfortably, sitting on the settee is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Thank you for joining us. This is our book podcast, episode 85 of...
Of what, Dave?
What? Of what?
Of what?
This iPad, you gotta have, am I dying? Am I dead? No, my fingertips work perfectly well, but if you have just a little bit of poor circulation or something, I don't know what it is.
Is it
but
not?
I punch the button. That's the name of it. Yeah. Flap. Oh, hi, yes. That's where we are. Flap. We're in the Inside Flap. We're not in it, where you are. Flap. Joining us. On the Inside Flap.
Deep inside.
Deep, deep, deep inside. All right. Thank you for wherever you are joining us as we are back from our trip from Taos back here in Littleton. Andrew is back from his trip. We'll hear all about that. We'll tell you about our trip in just a second. Wanted to tell you that our show today is brought to you by IndieBound. As the dog is slurping water noisily. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but Charlie, the bulldog, has entered.
And we should explain, it's in Denver. I think it hit 100 degrees today.
It was so hot.
I think we set a record. And, you know, the dog's lapping up water is what happens when it's 100 degrees.
Lapping it up. Our show, speaking of lapping it up, why don't you go over to IndieBound, lap yourself up some books. Make sure you visit our website first, theinsideflap.com. Click on the IndieBound link to head on over there while you're doing your book perusing and your book buying. It doesn't cost you a cent extra, and it does help to support the show as well as independent bookstores everywhere. Our guest this week is Bianca Maris. Her book is called If You Want to Make God Laugh. That's her latest one. It's out now in paperback. We'll have that conversation for you in just a bit. We had a really fun talk with Bianca.
Yeah, we did.
She was a lot of fun to talk to, and we'll have that for you in just a second. All right. So, yes, as I was mentioning, Laura and I are back. We just arrived back here as we record this on Saturday, and we're going to post this show on Sunday. Just arrived about a 4.5-hour drive back from Taos.
Easy drive.
Nice, easy drive. I want to tell you about the house we stayed. Now, we've stayed, so we always go to Airbnb or VRBO or one of those
Home
websites,
Away, yeah.
TripAdvisor, to rent a nice little house for the week we were down there. And we've stayed in dozens, if not, how do you say?
I don't know.
Decadozens.
Decadozens.
Like double dozens. doppel-dozens of Airbnbs over the years. And this one was one of the nicest for sure. Beautiful view of Wheeler Peak, aka Taos Mountain.
I think this was the nicest one we've ever stayed in.
This may have been the really...
We paid the most we've ever paid,
though. We certainly paid for it, yes.
Yeah.
As we had to cancel our other three vacations, so we kind of put all that money...
Felt like we were justified.
We spent a really good week there.
Yeah.
A beautiful place. It was nice. I took my bike down with me. Oh, my new bike. And I actually... had my very first I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my first little bike accident as I was coming down the little dirt road by our house, and then took a this was after a long bike ride coming down the dirt road trying to get all I wanted to do was get into the driveway to the place we were staying at. And as soon as I hit that loose gravel at the driveway, immediately it was just right down on the ground, gouged my elbow pretty good.
The kind of funny thing is I was sitting reading my book, and then I knew you'd be home soon, so I have just a terrible anxiety about you on a bicycle.
Yes.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
So my anxiety gets amped up around the time when I know... I should see you coming back.
Yeah.
So I was kind of looking up. Also, it was a beautiful view of Taos Mountain. Yes. Beautiful view. So I was looking up, and I was like, oh, good, there's Dave. And I see you come into the driveway.
Right, and across the yard there are a lot of sagebrush, which is pretty high up. So you see
abruptly
the sagebrush, right?
Disappeared.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's weird.
Huh.
And I thought, I wonder if he fell. And then I thought, well, no.
He
didn't fall.
Sure,
I guess I just thought I could see him the whole way. And then, like, 5 minutes later, I see you on your bike again. I thought, well, that's strange.
Nothing too bad. I did, it looks like someone took a cheese grater to my right hip. So that was a nice little badge of honor to wear. But the nicest thing about this house... now we like to unwind in the evenings with a little TV. You know, recently we what have we been through? Lost, Arrested Development, Community, and now we are logging a little time with the Mindy Project. A lot of fun. Sylvie enjoys it. We enjoy it. Good laughs. And we stayed at all the Airbnb places. Now I don't know what it is or what these owners of these Airbnb places do, but they, for whatever reason, this is the first place, maybe the second place we've ever stayed where they actually
literally might be the first
have the TV located in front of the couch, because every other place we've gone to. And you got to, like the last place we went to up in Lake George, they had the TV at the end of the dining room table for some reason.
So
what are you
going
to do? Sit in these hardback wooden chairs and watch TV? No, so every time what I have to do is I have to take, and you always have to be cognizant of all the cords and all the cables coming from the walls. You know, those satellite cables are like hardwired into the wall. So you start dragging a TV and a TV stand out from it. You got to be careful that cord doesn't catch. You get it about halfway across the room. Then you got to get the couch. You got to bring the couch the other halfway around the room to kind of meet up with where the TV is. It's a whole thing. And finally,
it was the first time.
It was like the first time we didn't have to. I didn't feel like I was working for a moving company.
That's what you get when you pay the extra bucks.
I mean, that's what you get, the TV in front of the couch.
Yeah.
It's not like we spent all day. Why was a couple, maybe an hour at night watching a couple of episodes.
Yeah. 10 to 11.
You know, it's nice to sit. You're not going to sit at a kitchen table. It's been in the kitchen before. It's been all over the place.
So the interesting thing is Laura is an interior designer.
Yeah.
And then you go into these Airbnbs where the layout... Right, it's just
boggles the mind.
Yeah. I bitch and moan about it every single time. And then this place, I could criticize it, and I told Dave what I would do to change the kitchen up. And I would.
Oh, yeah, the kitchen. Yeah.
So I went through all of that. But that was, other than that, it was a very minor, it would have been expensive, of course, to change that. But other than that.
Slightly. You went to hack the whole countertop down. another thing it had, nice. Now, a lot of these places do have this. They have a big chest full of board games there. And we got into a game that I used to play a lot as a kid. But, you know, Sylvia, our 14-year-old, she had never played it. And this surprised me how much she really took to this game. Andrew, How familiar are you with the game of Risk?
I'm familiar with that, yeah.
You ever play that a lot as a kid?
Did you play it as a teenager?
Probably not as a teenager, no.
Okay.
Well, how about as a kid?
As a kid, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. It was popular amongst teenagers of my age, but it was popular like among boy teenagers in particular.
Well, it really took us back. Now, we played the first couple of times we played. I think Laura won the first game.
I did. I usually do,
though.
It's a game
of world domination.
Because I catch you guys off guard. So if I'm going to win anything, yeah. I'm going to always win the first game because I'm going to catch you guys off guard. Because I'm a quick learner, but then I don't advance past being the quick learner to become an advanced player.
That's true. You won the first one. I won the second one. And then
I'm quick to get it.
That's true, yeah.
But I never advanced past that.
Due to the way it worked out. But this time, every other time we played, I don't know what happened, but it's like Sylvia grabbed a copy of The Art of War. So I managed to pull a little audio, right? I actually caught her. We were taking a little break, and I was walking back from the bathroom. She had her back to me, and I saw her addressing her troops. She had all her men in Irkutsk, getting ready to attack the Katachka Peninsula, where I had my army set up.
Well, so have you ever heard of any of those countries also?
No, but no. It's funny. I looked it up. Irkutsk is the fifth largest city in the Soviet Union.
Oh, is it really?
There you go.
Well,
yeah.
Okay.
It's a coastal town, correct?
Yes, it is. Yep. Oh. I don't know.
I don't know.
pretty sure it is.
It might be. I'm trying to
picture the board. There was some coast up there, the top.
I'm trying to picture the board now. But anyway, this is what I heard her saying to one of her army guys.
You're going back to the front, my friend.
There she is.
You may get shot, you may get killed, but you're going up to the fighting.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. It was like a whole different person out there.
That explains it. Was she Patton?
Dorothy Scott, the great Dorothy Scott and Patton. She was strengthening her borders, triangulating her attacks. I mean, my strategy was just to dump all my armies on Greenland.
No, your strategy just was to incessantly attack.
Sweep through North America or Europe or wherever and just use up all my men. And I'd waste like a third of the armies trying to, defeat the other people. And then I'd have a bunch of single armies scattered all over my countries. But she just showed the patience and fortitude necessary to be a military hero. I was shocking. Shocking.
She did.
Unbelievable.
She organized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here she is again.
You're going back to the front, my friend.
That's right. That was it.
You may
the guy
get
who
shot.
Was,
yeah, like you a, may get killed.
He was crying.
But you're going up to the fighting.
She didn't care. She was going to send him right back out to the front.
That's really funny.
But it was a good week, a restful week. Laura, would you not agree?
Well, that clip reminded me of you a little bit, Dave, on one of the hikes we took where you said it was a trail, and it wasn't really a trail, Andrew. It was like a fishing trail. Like hey, I'm going to throw my lines in this river
along the Red River as it was.
So there's loose rock,
the Rio Grande.
There's loose rock everywhere. We're like bushwhacking a little bit, and the loose rock just everywhere, huge boulders with small loose stuff. And
it was going up and down,
it was hot.
Up and down, up and down.
And I had done, Sylvia was scampering ahead with Dave, shocker. And she's like, I love this type of hiking.
It was overgrown with weeds.
And
we're kind of beating our way through it.
I have gained a little bit of pandemic LBs, and I'm a little self-conscious about it. And I had my glasses on also to add that to the picture. My glasses are they're trifocals.
Well, your glasses were not doing you any favors.
So my glasses are slipping down my fat, sweaty face.
Right.
And then I'm pushing them back up continually, but I can't see the boulders very clearly.
No, and the one thing you
step
need to
on
be able to
carefully
do,
to see to be, what's yeah. loose and what might not be loose and what could be stable. Because the bottom part of my glasses are blurry because I can't see my feet because that's for my reading portion.
Uh-huh.
And so my middle portion are like for laptop viewing. And that's really, so I kept trying to move my head so that the center part of my glasses would be like aimed at my feet a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't work. So I'm having trouble. I'm falling behind. And Dave keeps yelling back at me, engage your core. Engage your core.
I did say that once.
And just shouting at me to engage my core was not a fun way. I didn't feel fun. I felt fat.
My friend.
I felt fat and I felt blind and old. Oh, I also felt old.
That's a lot of things to feel. A lot of feelings were going on.
I felt old. Yeah.
Regular. Yeah. Feelings.
Sounds like a delightful hike.
Yeah, it was great, Andrew. Yeah. It's just fantastic.
Well, I believe what we did after a while was turned around. It was
I bitched and moaned and bitched and moaned enough. Mm-hmm. That George C. Scott here finally turned around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do love Taos. There's something incredibly beautiful to me about it. Don't know why. I can't put my finger on why I find it so beautiful, but
it's it's that Taos hum.
There's a lot of artists and other people that have found it similarly beautiful. Mm-hmm. And just a beautiful area.
Yep.
Yeah. How are you doing, Andrew?
Well,
Andrew came back. Andrew, we just got to set the table.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but I've heard some ominous things.
Came in here, head hanging low. Both he just got back from his trip this weekend and didn't really want to talk about it, but maybe we can cajole him out of it right now.
So let me tell you how I feel.
Yes. Oh, how do you feel? Well, speaking of feelings, a lot of feelings.
I'm angry. Ooh. I'm upset.
Oh.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm you know, and like for me, when something isn't right, you know, I want to fix it right away, right? I can't rest until...
You're a fixer. You're a real
fixer.
Yeah,
you are a fixer.
Absolutely. 100%.
Definitely.
So I just have so many emotions right now. I am drained.
Oh, no.
That I'm not even sure what to feel at this point.
Wow.
So,
man.
We went up to Granby, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful town. It's about 16 miles from one of the entrances to... What's that?
The western entrance of Rocky Mountain.
Rocky Mountain National Park. And we took our beautiful camper up there. Two kitchens, two bathrooms.
Two kitchens, doppel kitchens.
Two separate bedrooms.
Oh yeah.
And you know, so beautiful campsite where we've got mostly unobstructed view of the mountains.
Nice.
You know, great time. And so the goal was I was going to work in the camper while the kids were working. And you know, unfortunately, things at work are just so busy. That, you know, 6 in the morning, I'm there at my laptop till 4 in the afternoon.
Wow.
Sitting on the sofa in the camper. And I was hoping...
That's not fun.
No, and I was hoping I'd have more time for the kids.
That's so stressful, Andrew.
That this would be relaxing.
That's even worse than if you were home.
Well, and it was. And especially because the internet was hokey.
Sketchy internet. Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, so I'm basically calling in for the conference calls and... I can't do my screen share and stuff like that. So we got through the week and
limped through.
And Katie made the decision that, you know, she's done with the camper. One more road trip with the camper and we are buying a little vacation house up in Granby. So we found this nice little brand new three bedroom house, 2016 square feet.
Bigger than our home.
Yep, new construction. And it's not very expensive, but it's in a resort.
Oh, in a resort.
But the location is phenomenal. It's
very nice.
It's this beautiful green valley. I mean, and we're talking a large valley, not a little valley, but just expansive green hills.
It's Colorado. Everything's bigger here.
Yeah, Grand Lake,
mm-hmm.
Granby Lake, the huge, beautiful lakes, which it's actually the headwater of the Colorado River is right there.
Oh.
But it is just unbelievable up there. And there are bike trails, there are hiking trails. There are lakes big enough to take, some people have like 30, 40 foot sailboats out on out in these lakes. And there's ski slopes right there as well, right? So there's multiple ski slopes.
Anything you need for recreating year-round.
It's a playground.
It's a playground, maestro.
So the premise here is we left this morning and we've got one more trip planned in the camper and the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get back, we are going to sell the truck and we're going to sell the camper.
It's a great time to sell that stuff too, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Great time.
So we get home uneventful, and so we are...
This is just today, right?
Yeah, today. Okay. And so we are backing the camper up. And so I live in the back of the neighborhood, and there's a cul-de-sac. So not a big deal. So
it's a world-famous cul-de-sac, I would say.
World-famous.
Yeah. That's right. Podcast-famous cul-de-sac here.
Yeah, we talked about it with the...
Last time, Andrew was, if you remember, he was shooting fireworks into the crowd on his cul-de-sac.
Yeah. Do you want to I do have audio. Yeah, I do have audio.
Do you have audio of that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, hold on. Oh, no. Oh, no. There's his neighbors
So
screaming for the exits.
So basically, we, you know, with the 43-foot fifth wheel, I've got to drive past the cul-de-sac, and then I've got to turn the car to back the trailer in, right? And Kitty and I have taken this on a dozen or more trips, right? So we basically have had to park this thing maybe two dozen times.
Old hat.
And so the drill is the kids turn everything off. The windows are down on the truck. We're listening. We're talking. We're communicating.
Sure.
Or so I thought. Oh, no. And basically I've got Katie out there.
Yeah. So she's guiding you back, right?
And there's two things that I need her to watch out for.
Two things. What are those two things?
One is to make sure that, you know, I don't back into anything, right? Am I getting close to something?
Right.
And the second thing is...
Overhead power lines. I learned that. And Laura, look out for overhead power lines.
Okay, Laura, when I say these words...
Yes.
If I say, the cab and the camper, how much space is there between the cab and the camper?
Oh, so when you mean if you don't turn too sharp so that the camper hits the cab?
Oh, you got it.
Okay.
You got it. Now... When I say...
I didn't know that was possible.
When I say cab of a truck, what part of the truck do you think that is?
The part where people sit.
That's right. So today I'm backing up. And basically I'm talking like, how much space is there between the cab and the camper? 6 inches. Okay. So I keep cutting it. How about now? 6 inches. Okay. Now, I must have said this about a dozen times. And then all of a sudden,
so
it's the sound of glass, but it was much deeper, and it was like something
exploded,
in the truck. So I got three kids sitting in the back seat,
screaming. Probably.
So what happened is, I had turned the camper sharp enough.
It was more that
the back of the camper hit the back of the truck, exploded the entire rear window.
Whoa!
With the man. Kids got safety glass flying.
Do that sound again, Dave.
Everywhere.
Can you mesh that sound with the sound of the crowd screaming?
Why, yes, I can. There it is. Andrew's kids.
Yeah, and that, there were no
jacket.
Tears, but the kids were screaming and everything. And so
I can't believe the safety glass popped out.
Wow.
Oh, God. And so, it broke the entire rear windshield.
Wow.
There's glass everywhere. It dented a little bit of the cab of the truck. Not significantly, but enough that I need to have the body worked. The metal repaired before you can replace the window. So we're supposed to be leaving in a week, but basically,
how did the camper fare?
It's just a little scratch on the camper.
That camper's indestructible.
Wow.
And so I had a
this is a big truck we're talking about. So
it
when
is.
You say you got to get a little body work done, that's not going to be cheap.
Well,
yeah, F-350.
I would have thought that the camper would have not won that scenario.
That's a good point.
I guess it's because it hit the glass.
Well, and I have an aluminum cover for the camper that gets folded up and sits between the camper and the truck. And so that aluminum cover kind of buffered.
That's what it did.
Kind of buffered. Now, would it have been worse, or would it not even have happened had that cover not been on the truck? Because I would have had an extra one. So I would have had an extra couple inches.
Yeah.
Probably an extra 4 or 5 inches. And I would have been able to see myself. If that cover
was
there.
If it was there, yeah.
Right, so in hindsight...
When you left the house, were your kids still picking out pieces of safety glass from their hair?
I put a blanket over the back of the truck. I put some rocks on the roof and just didn't touch it. And because the thing is, there's so much glass still in the window. There's glass on the bed of the truck. There's glass inside the cab of the truck that, I mean, really, you know, all that... The back seats all have to get taken out. Everything has to get taken out.
Did you drive it over here?
No. Oh, okay. No. There's no driving it. And... So the thing is, now I'm probably getting ready to trade this truck in 2 weeks.
I know.
Just getting ready.
I'm getting ready.
What do you
sell?
Get your eye on? Wow. I want a new Ford Bronco.
To sell the camper.
I want a 2-door.
Yeah, you want that new Ford Bronco. So,
anyways,
custom color.
So the thing is, the dozens of times, hundreds of times, that Katie and I have been in a scenario. So now the only miracle is that this hasn't happened sooner. Because when I was saying how much space is there between the cab and the truck,
she
is thinking the cab refers to the bed of the pickup truck, and the camper, right? Which there's not going to be an issue. There's not going to be an issue there. It's always going to be up close to where the camper
to where it's turning.
Yep. To where it's turning. So, you know, so she feels bad.
I do have audio of what Andrew said to Katie afterwards.
Oh, blast it!
There he is. Something like that.
Well, and I mean, I'm so upset, seething, right? And I haven't even managed to get it out yet, right? I don't even know. You know what I mean? It's there. So the thing is,
you're lucky it happened at the end of the journey.
And it's true, because if it happened before,
you'd have to deal with the glass.
Well,
and driving home,
of course we'd be. And I'm glad nobody's hurt, but I'd be really lucky if it hadn't happened at all.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
So now
that's true.
That's a bingo.
So,
now,
so here's the way the rest of the afternoon went. So. So I think it's probably $3,000 or $4,000 worth of damage, right?
Ooh,
right. So yeah. we'll see. Now, basically, we'd also just found out as we were pulling in,
mm-hmm.
right? And maybe Katie was a little preoccupied with this because we had just gotten this message from our neighbor, who lives a couple hundred yards from our house,
mm-hmm.
that they sent us a picture of a baby bear in their backyard.
Whoa!
Wow.
And so,
oh, I heard there were bears.
Yeah,
and so yeah. I heard there were bears spotted in Highlands Ranch.
Well, now I can tell you they're in Littleton.
Wow!
And so, basically, there's a mama bear, and then there's the baby bear. But literally, it's the cul-de-sac over from our house. I mean, you know, I could probably throw a baseball and hit their house from where we were.
We had one a couple summers ago that Sylvia at her elementary school had to shelter in place because there was a mama bear and a baby bear yeah. in that neighborhood.
So I wonder yep. if it's well, like, it can't be the mama bear or the baby bear.
No.
Yeah.
It could be the same mom.
So there's alerts now,
I
right?
Guess.
And we knew 2 miles away that there were bears, but now they're in our neighborhood. So I told Kate, I said, look, why don't you take the kids?
Also, listener, we don't live in the wilds. We live in suburbia.
That's true. This is yeah. suburbia.
Yeah. yeah.
And so I told her, so why don't you take the kids in the car that is not full of glass, and why don't you drive around the neighbor to see if you guys can see the bear, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we park the camper and all that stuff, and so I go in the backyard, and we've been away for about a week, and so I walk down and whatever, and all of a sudden, I have hornets buzzing around my head.
Oh.
So in the week that we're gone, the hornets have decided to build a nest, and there's like 20 or 30 hornets that have decided to build a nest. You know, so...
So then, it's amazing what happens geez. In 1 week.
So then I go.
You go away.
Oh, there's more.
There's more.
You get bees. We get rabbits.
We have bunnies
we have baby
now.
Bunnies.
Oh, we've
cute
got those
baby bunnies. Okay.
And so then I go to the shed because I've got a can of wasp spray
yeah.
sure.
in
yeah.
the shed.
Uh-oh.
So then I go to in the shed, and just as I'm getting ready to open the door, this huge 3 or 4 foot long garter snake is like jumping out of me.
Oh my goodness.
It's like jumping out of me from the shed. But between bears and bees and garter snakes, I mean, we're gone for a week. And
nature has taken over.
Mother Nature has
taken over.
Yeah, taken over
wow.
the yard.
Man.
That is strange what nature does.
It's like I Am Legend. You know, he's gone for a little bit and then...
So we have baby bunnies living under the gazebo now.
Yeah, we just got some bunnies is all.
But, you know, in any event... I mean, with bears in the neighborhood
yeah.
and a mama bear and a baby and a cub.
It's a dangerous situation.
Well, you know, the
potentially.
The kids can't really go out on their own, right? I mean,
yeah.
you can't go out in the yard. I mean, you've got to be careful. But yeah, that was my afternoon.
It's been a solid 4 or 5 hours for you.
Oh, that is nuts. Man.
Hey, welcome back. Good to have you back.
Yeah, and so Monday is my birthday.
Andrew!
And
big 5-0.
And I'll be spending the day at the auto body shop trying to see how fast and how much it's going to cost me
Because when are you supposed to leave?
Well, we're supposed to leave on Friday, but we decided anyway to not leave until Saturday morning.
Okay.
But the question is really now is, can the truck be fixed?
Yeah.
And
what kind of turnaround they're going to get on that?
Well, and the windshield isn't really the issue. Right,
it's the body work.
Yeah, it's
body work takes forever,
and it's just a little bit of body work, right? But they can't sit there and put a new windshield in and then bang and shape the metal,
right?
You know, basically a centimeter away from it. So I think there's a chance it can get fixed in time, you know. But then
yeah.
I went to the Best Buy today just to buy some memory cards,
mm-hmm.
and. Like
memory cards. For
cameras.
I
didn't know.
It sounds like you had an afternoon of memories. I don't want to get away from memory
cards. I didn't know
cards.
What was going on.
and, And half the shelves were empty at the Best Buy. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe
Andrew
it.
Andrew can't catch a break today.
Well, no,
why not catch a break?
It's interesting.
Well, and it's just part of it is like you were saying too, as you go through these towns.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This is my first trip in the Best Buy in months.
Yeah.
And I go in there.
They weren't doing good before the pandemic.
And half the shelves are empty.
They were not doing good before the pandemic started. Yeah. No, but man, it's sad to see to drive through parts of the country and then just think, you know what? They're not going to make it. If this continues on, this town won't be able to make it. People are going to have to move for jobs.
Yeah. And I mean, I call it the COVID decade, and that's, I encourage all listeners is, you know, plan for a decade. I mean, you got to think about getting through 10 years of this.
Wasps.
Now, the first 2 years,
snakes,
are probably
bears.
Gonna be the worst. Yep. But you got to plan for the long haul. And part of it is,
let's hope we don't get tigers.
I'm looking forward to getting rid of the truck. I'm looking forward to getting rid of the camper.
It's stressful, isn't it? Driving it a little bit.
Well,
maybe not.
And actually, it's not bad driving
it
at all.
That's good.
But you know, but the taxes and the insurance and the storage,
yeah,
on the truck and
the storage
camper,
is expensive.
You know, I'm probably spending $10,000-$14,000 a year before we even go anywhere in those things.
Wow.
So I'm looking forward to getting rid of
a little home base.
Yeah, getting rid of that expense, getting a nice small you know vehicle that gets like 30 some miles per gallon.
Check out the new Fords.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, you got a Ford. Can't you trade it in for another Ford or no?
And I could, and I know they've got the new Ford Broncos and stuff like that, but
I think they're sold out, the new ones.
Yeah, all the good models are sold out.
They're sold out.
Yeah, all the models that you want.
I know.
Yeah. But it's good. I own Ford stock, so maybe that'll help out some.
There you go.
Well, I think that will.
Way to find the silver lining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, yes.
That's not why we were talking about the Ford Bronco also, because Andrew is Ford stock.
Right.
It's funny.
All right, well, here's something you can take stock in. Our guest this week is Bianca Maris. Her book that is just now out in paperback is called If You Want to Make God Laugh, and this is a fantastic book. We're going to, Laura and I talk to Bianca. We'll have that conversation for you in just a second, but I want to tell you about her book. So this novel is fantastic. It is set in post-apartheid Johannesburg, South Africa in the early 90s, right as Nelson Mandela is elected president, and you've got AIDS as an epidemic ravaging the countries. But really not a good time.
A tragic time in history.
Absolutely, yes. And then on top of that, you've got these three women. So the story is about three women, and all of these three women are undergoing some kind of crisis at the start of this novel. You've got Zadwa. She is a 17-year-old girl living in a tin-roofed and dirt-floored squatter camp. She's also 8 months pregnant, and this is a pregnancy that was a result of her being raped by her best friend's boyfriend. You've got Ruth. Now, Ruth is a white, wealthy socialite and former stripper. She's trying to win her husband back by having him discover her after a, quote, fake overdose while she's in the bathtub.
Wow.
And then you've got her sister, Delilah. She is a disgraced former nun, and Delilah has just moved back in with Ruth after many years, and she is dealing with their relationship from her past. So, you know, picture this, a tragic time, troubled time, three women in crises.
So this sounds like an interesting version of Charlie's Angels.
Yes, exactly.
And so who plays, who's the guy? What's the guy's name in Charlie's Angels?
I don't know. What,
Charlie.
You never saw the guy's
voice. His name is Charlie.
Did you just ask who's the guy in Charlie's Angels?
Oh, yeah, Charlie's. Yeah.
Charlie.
Yeah.
Charlie's the guy in Charlie's
Angels. It's one of those.
You might want to pick up one of those memory cards for yourself.
So is there a Charlie in the story?
There is not a Charlie in this story. But you know what? There is in the story, there is a baby. And this story is about how these three women all come together over this baby. Or actually, kind of the baby kind of connects them all. I don't want... It's one of those books...
I haven't read the book yet, and it sounded so good talking to her.
So good.
And it's a time period that I don't know... That time and place, I don't know much about.
Right. I learned a lot reading this book. This is a story about overcoming adversity. This is a story of the strength and power of women and the bonds that women have with their children. I absolutely love this book. I cared deeply, deeply, and was so strongly vested in all three of these women's stories. And like you'll hear me admit to Bianca in our chat, I was just a puddle of tears at the end of it. A puddle of tears. This is a great conversation we had with her. She was a lot of fun to talk to, and here she is right now. This is Bianca Maris. I loved your freshly paperbacked book, If You Want to Make God Laugh. The story is set in 1990s South Africa. It's the tale of three women on the brink, in a country on the brink, a beautifully written, heart-wrenching saga of regret, loss, love, and a baby. Bianca, what inspired you to write this book?
So I grew up in South Africa during apartheid, and just after the end of apartheid, when everybody thought that the country's worst problems were behind them, when Nelson Mandela became president, laws started to change, the constitution started to change. It was this amazing time in South African history. And then the AIDS pandemic hit. And because of the AIDS pandemic, it wiped out an entire generation of South Africans, anywhere between the ages of like 80 and 50, leaving behind orphaned HIV-positive children to be cared for by, you know, women who had labored their whole lives as maids, women who were denied an education due to the Bantu Education Act and apartheid. And suddenly this was their reality and this was their life. And I then started volunteering in Soweto with HIV AIDS orphans and their caregivers, which I did for 10 years. And it was just the most defining period in my life. And that it was my experience there, my experience with these women and these children that inspired the telling of the story.
One of the many interesting things I find about your book is that your three main characters, so when we first meet them at the beginning of the book, they are all, you know, at the bottom. I mean, they're all undergoing their own personal crises and life-altering crises. And this is our introduction to them as readers. Was this the way you always envisioned having your characters start out like that? I mean, it sounds like it because of just the horrific time the country was going through at that point.
Yeah, I very much wanted what the characters were going through to mirror what the country was going through.
Right.
You know, the country was in transition at that time in 1994, well, 93 to 94, as the first democratic elections were happening. White people were expecting civil war. They were expecting retribution from black people. So everyone was kind of terrified. There was this sense of underlying tension throughout that whole period of time. And I wanted what my characters were going through to reflect that. So each of the three women, when we meet them, they're at this moment of personal crisis that they then have to struggle to overcome.
Yeah, there is a lot of struggle, but just I think just the way that we're introduced to them, it helps us, you know, feel for them and root for them as they go along. And it just makes us really just jump right into their lives immediately and care for them. So I like the way you started it.
Thank you. And it's not the way, you know, I started my first novel with that. I sort of more had this period of stasis to show you what their lives were like beforehand. But there is something about a character in crisis and a character struggling that immediately, you know, makes you root for them in ways that you otherwise might not.
And the stories you tell of these three women, it's so heartfelt, so poignant and universal. It feels like you poured a lot of just care and love into them. Were any of them based on real life people?
So Zodwa, the young Zulu girl, she was a composite of many of the young women that I worked with in Soweto. You know, there was a sense of time running out at that time. This was before antiretrovirals were available. And many of these young women who had, you know, one child or two children or three children had envisioned living to raise their children. And suddenly they were so ill and they knew that they weren't going to get to raise their children. And there was the sense of unfulfilled potential. You know, they had these dreams because suddenly the laws of apartheid weren't there anymore, and kind of they had these hopes and dreams, and they were now being shot down. And these women sat with me and they confided in me and they shared their stories with me and they asked me to tell their stories because they didn't want to feel like their struggle, their lives had been in vain. And so for me, Zadwa was a composite of so many of these women who so generously shared their stories with me. And she was probably my favorite character. Her strength was just amazing.
Yeah.
And then Ruth is just such a narcissist, you know. She's a classic narcissist who has like no self-awareness.
Well, I love the beginning of the novel. You know, she's in the bathtub. She's pretending to commit suicide, waiting for her husband, her ex-husband to come in. Look at me! Look at me!
She's terrible. And then yeah. she says that death was a side effect of her suicide attempt that she wasn't anticipating.
Exactly, yeah.
She's just, I didn't think about that. Yeah, she's delightful and terrible in equal measures. And, you know, she's like a bit of a whole bunch of people, but her character was actually inspired by a woman who was a stripper in South Africa in the 70s. Her name was Glenda Kemp, and she used to, as part of a strip show, she had a python that she danced with. And
so that's real.
These days, we're meant to like really frown on, you know, women who do these kinds of things and are trying to attract the male gaze. But at that point in time, she was a major feminist, you know, to be a woman who was taking her clothes off at a time when it was illegal, at such a dangerous time in South Africa's history.
Right.
And at most of her shows, something like 30% of her audience were the South African police, who was supposedly there to
shut her down. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. Like she didn't break the law.
Yeah, everybody was volunteering for that duty, right?
Yeah, everybody. I mean, you know, so she fascinated me as a character, but Ruth is very different to how Glenda Kemp is. And then Delilah wasn't based on anyone at all. I myself am not a religious person. And religion kind of fascinates me in that it can be such an amazing grounding foundation for so many people. And it just gives them hope and it gives them strength. And I wanted to explore that. And the heartbreaking part for me about Delilah is that after the book came out, I had four nuns reach out to me from across the world to tell me that they felt that I had written their story.
Yeah.
And that was kind of devastating.
Yeah,
but, you know, it was wonderful that I wrote her so realistically that she resonated with women who had lived that experience. Mm.
They all feel like real people, for sure. And I'm wondering, so how long did you spend working with these young women in Africa or South Africa?
It was 9 years in total.
Oh, wow.
So I started volunteering with an organization there, and then I kind of became frustrated with the limitations of that. And I partnered up with somebody else and we started our own nonprofit organization there as well, that we ran across a whole bunch of South African. I mean, they euphemistically call them informal settlements. You know, in South Africa, they're known as squatter camps.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's shacks, no electricity, no running water. And you can imagine the struggles that they're currently having with COVID because, you know, it makes social distancing impossible.
Yeah. Yeah.
How can you wash your hands all the time when you don't have running water? So, you know, very, very challenging.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, and your description of those camps in the book really brings it home to life, you know. Have you heard back from any of the families of the women that you worked with this book?
Yeah, there are tons of families that I got super, super close to. My husband and I almost adopted a little girl at one point.
Wow.
And she then got fostered by a black family in Soweto.
Nice.
Who very generously allowed us to continue a relationship with her. Mm. And she turned 17 this year.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
And she's just amazing, such an amazing child. And, I'm very much involved with these families in Soweto. I actually should have been in South Africa in May to surprise my childhood caregiver for her 97th birthday.
Wow.
That got cancelled due to COVID. And, you know, but I try and get back as much as I can because, you know, these people have become like family.
Yeah.
Did you, since you kind of lived through this with the AIDS epidemic running rampant, Nelson Mandela beginning his presidency, did you uncover anything that surprised you about, you know, it's a time that you live through, but did you do any research then? You're like, oh, I didn't realize that this was going on.
Yeah, I found that my research for my first novel, which was 1976 in South Africa, unearthed a lot more that was surprising. Because at that period of time, the media was censored. I mean, in the US, you want to talk about fake news. South Africa.
Don't want to.
Yeah.
No, we don't want to.
South Africa at that time was all about the fake news. It was all about propaganda.
Yeah.
And things that people thought was happening and that was being reported in the papers was not what was, you know, really going on. And I was very surprised by how it was very much the Jewish population in South Africa in the 70s who were the anti-apartheid activists, even though they themselves were very much being persecuted. So that, you know, there were tons of things then that I found out in terms of this, because I'd lived through it, because AIDS interested me so much. There wasn't much that I, you know, that I found out that that really surprised me.
Well, one thing I was surprised with and what I thought was fascinating that they seemed to come about from the end of apartheid, as a character in your book says, quote, white people are acting crazy. And the women who were used to being waited on by their black maids, suddenly we're now waiting on them and are hell bent on proving just how not racist they are. Is this a common thing that occurred?
Yeah. I mean, this is something that's still happening today, Dave. Like, what drives me insane about the Black Lives Matter movement in terms of South Africans' response to it is most South Africans are like, well, I treat my maid well, and I have one black friend, so how can I possibly be racist? This is where we are in South Africa in terms of racism. I've had South Africans say, but I give my maid my leftover food and my clothes that I'm throwing away, so how can I be racist, you know? And this is something that happened as, you know, at the end of apartheid, white people were kind of rallying to prove that they had this one black friend, that they weren't racist. And it's still ongoing today.
Wow.
That was quite surprising to read about. Now, I'd love your title, If You Want to Make God Laugh. It's much better than what I would have named it, which is Three Women and a Baby. But, you know, I was always getting nostalgic for Steve Guttenberg movies from the 1980s. Is that your title? You seem to have interesting titles for all your for your books.
I have very wordy titles for my books, which is very apt because I'm extremely wordy. If something could be said in a sentence, I'll say it in a page. So that was not the original title for this book. The original title for this book was going to be Shooting Stars and Mason Jars.
Oh, wow.
Which is what Ruth and Delilah's father likened them to. He said, there is difference as shooting stars and mason jars. Mm-hmm. And my publisher was like, oh, absolutely not. It sounds like an American South romance novel.
It kind of, so, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So we came up with the other title was, and I don't want to credit it to Woody Allen. So I'm going to credit it to the Jewish saying that is, man plans and God laughs, which is, you know, really just to say that we have so little control over our lives and the things that we think we have control over. And COVID right now is telling us more than anything how little control we have.
Yes.
But I wanted to show, you know, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. And these women have all got plans for their lives. They all have hopes. They all have dreams. And then they get shot down. And for me, this is what fascinates me about human beings. It's what fascinates me about the human spirit. It's how we overcome adversity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's how we kind of take these things in our stride and how we keep getting out of bed every morning and how we keep going even if our plans are not going the way we intended. And that was so true of all three of these women. So it was a great title.
It really is a great title. Yeah. And I felt that while reading your book, because you start out and you're like, oh, man, what is this? What is this abyss I've sunk into? And so you immediately get vested in the story. And then you root for these women and you follow them, you know, throughout their journeys. And then by the end, I mean, I was just a sobbing puddle on the floor that needed to be mopped up. But it really touched my heart and was very, very heartfelt. And I could feel, you know, your empathy and your, you know, your intense feelings that you had for these women. And it really showed through. So,
Thank you. Thank you. And I know I sound like a terrible, you know, sadist when I love that people were crying. You know, people go, I cried. And I'm like, really? That's wonderful. But, you know, it's simply because as a writer, I feel like I inhabit each of my characters' bodies when I write from their perspective.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't see them from the outside as you would with a film. It's like I inhabit them and I look out from their bodies. And while I'm writing them, I feel all their pain and I feel all their misery. And there are tons of times when I'm writing that I am an emotional mess where I'm crying, you know, and it's always so rewarding to know that that translates to the reader, that they feel things as intensely as you do when you're writing something.
Yeah. And I also thought it was an interesting choice you made to have Ruth and Delilah. So you told their stories in first person. What brought that decision about?
Yeah, that was so misunderstood. I got my every writer dreams of a New York Times kind of book review, and I got mine and I was trashed.
What?
And that was kind of one of the reasons. So let me explain how my process works. When I begin writing a character, I write them from every single point of view as I find my way into their voice and as I get to know them. So first person, third person, past tense, present tense, I'm all over the map. And then I find my way into their voice. And so Ruth, as I said before, complete narcissist, delightful to write in the first person, because there's so much about herself that she doesn't know and that she betrays unknowingly in her narcissism. Delilah, brilliant to write in the first person because she's so emotionally scarred. She's so damaged. She's keeping secrets from herself and from the world. So again, so easy to write in the first person. Mm-hmm. Now, when it came to Zodwa, I tried her in the first person. But the thing with Zodwa is that her experience was so different to anything that North American readers have read before. Her culture, her Zulu culture, everything about her was so completely different. And I wanted the reader to know things and to have context about Zodwa that Zodwa herself could not tell the reader. So on the very second page of the novel, there's a scene with a traditional healer and Inyanga who is consuming these roots so that she can commune with the ancestors.
Right.
And I wanted you as the reader to know this and to understand what was happening.
Uh-huh.
And Zodwa, in her own words, would not have been able to tell you this because Zodwa didn't know anything about traditional...
That's a great point, yeah.
About traditional medicine or about any of this. Mm-hmm. So I then chose to write Zodwa in the third person because as a narrator, there's so much more I could tell the reader that Zodwa herself wouldn't know. Mm. And this was wildly misunderstood in the review. The person said that
That's silly. It's a silly thing to pick on.
Yeah, well, they said that I did it because I saw Zodwa as a black woman as being less than
white
woman.
Wow.
And, you know, that was... I welcome a lot of criticism. Like, for example, in terms of appropriation, should I, as a white author, be writing black women's stories? This is a conversation I absolutely want to be having, and I completely welcome this conversation. And so there's a lot of criticism that I'm happy to take on board and that I evaluate, but that was just really misunderstood, and so that was kind of upsetting. Yeah.
And unfair.
Unfair. And I would challenge that schmuck who wrote that review to get on your Goodreads and read those reviews, because people absolutely, myself included, love your book. So
you have great reviews on Goodreads.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to have readers connect with your work. You know, professional reviews are wonderful if they're very favorable. But honestly, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is your readers.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. They've got your back for sure.
Definitely.
Now, one of the most horrific things, another thing that you touch on in the book that I was not aware of, this practice of canned lion hunting. I mean, how widespread was this? Can you talk a little bit about this? What a terrible practice.
It's still widespread in South Africa and other African countries.
Wow.
So you have tourists from across the world who kind of think that
you can say it. You can say it. Mostly Americans, I'm sure. I know you didn't want to say it.
I promise it's not mostly Americans.
Okay, all right.
It really is all over the world, and it's people with really good intentions. Like they want to go and volunteer with lion cubs, or they want to go and volunteer with wild animals that they think are being rehabilitated. They think they've been found in the wild and are being rehabilitated to be put back in the wild.
Oh.
But there is no lion cub that has ever been rehabilitated back into the wild after it's been pet by humans and turned into a kind of pet. And this is what happens at these institutions. They bring tourists out. Tourists pay to pet lion cubs to have photographs with them, to sit with them, and they don't realize that what is actually happening is they are getting these lion cubs used to humans so that when they grow up and get put in an encaged enclosure, people who can come with their big guns, they don't even hunt these animals down.
Wow.
They pretty much sit on the back of a vehicle and shoot an animal in an enclosed area, and then they go home with their awesome trophy of a lion's head. And it's just appalling. And obviously something I feel very, very strongly about. And I see time and again, many friends from across the world will post pictures of themselves with wild animals, whether it's cheetah cubs or lion cubs. And it's such an amazing experience for them. But then you have to break it to them very gently that they're actually a part of the problem when they do things like this. And to say, please don't ever interact with wild animals in any kind of situation, because you know this is what you are inadvertently doing.
Wow.
Oh, what a terrible practice. All right, well, on a lighter note,
not a good segue here. We have no way to segue into this.
Let's
people are now becoming aware of it. People are stopping the practice.
Great.
So it's by talking about it that we spread
knowledge exactly
about it.
And that's why I wanted to ask you about it, because I did not know about it. It's important.
Yeah.
It's important to
We had even thought about going to Kenya.
That's right,
at some point.
Yeah. You know what? Doing a normal safari, that's amazing. They need the tourism.
Okay.
And when you go with a reputable company and you go in the back of a safari vehicle and you do a proper safari, that is amazing. But it's when you go and sit with baby cubs and play with them, that's when the problem comes in. So please definitely go on safari, support these companies. Just don't buy into anything that involves baby animals sitting on your lap.
As amazing as that might sound.
It does sound amazing, but no.
Okay, good to know. All right, it's time for our speed round segment we call Fast 8-8. Quick questions to find out a little bit more, Bianca, about you. What is the last show you watched and or binged and really enjoyed?
I am busy watching Catastrophe at the moment.
Oh, I don't know that
What
one.
Is that?
Is it Catastrophe? Yes, it is. It's about a Irish woman who has a one-night stand with an American guy, and she gets pregnant, and then he moves to Ireland, and they decide to get married. It's hilarious.
Oh, that sounds really good.
That sounds really good. Yeah. We'll have to check that one.
And it's quite a few seasons in, so I'm busy enjoying watching all of that.
Oh, that sounds great.
Excellent.
Yeah. What is something that people often get wrong about you?
People tend to tell me I'm quite intimidating, which always makes me laugh. I feel like I'm the equivalent of like a golden retriever puppy. I tend to have strong opinions and, you know, I tend to share them, and that can be a bit intimidating for people who say that when they meet me, they think I'm quite scary, but then they get to know me and they like me.
That makes sense.
I have not been scared once this whole time.
I haven't either.
I can't speak for... Okay,
no, I haven't either. But I could see that could happen to you because of your history in the nonprofits and all the good work that you've done. Yeah.
That's true. People could be a little intimidated.
I would be intimidated by that. Yeah.
That's true. What is one movie you would not skip past while flipping through the channels?
Love Actually.
Richard Curtis. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
really
good.
Good. Yeah. What is that one? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's just me and Colin Firth. Oh, my goodness. Since I saw Colin Firth as Mr. Darcy in the BBC adaptation, it's just love at first sight. He's my celebrity that I'm allowed.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, yeah.
My husband
and I agree, so, yeah.
Well, and what about your husband then?
I actually don't know who he is. Oh my God, that's terrible.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, it's but a one-way street, huh?
But no, that's actually good because then he can pretend anyone is his.
Oh, that's
person.
True.
There you
I
go.
I think yeah. he's playing the long game there, yeah.
Yeah, that is a long game. That's really funny.
You need to talk to him
and
about that.
And you just kind of were like, oh, Colin Firth. Colin he didn't Firth. Leave Colin it open Firth. For...
Yeah. It's yeah. laminated. It's on a piece of paper.
Yeah. That's pretty yeah. funny. What is one book you'll never forget?
I would say Tim Wooten wrote We Are All the Same. And he wrote it about Nkosi Johnson, who was the face of AIDS in South Africa in 2000. He lived to 12 when he passed oh. away. And he took on the South African AIDS denialist president, Thabo Mbeki, at that point in time, mm-hmm. and asked him to make antiretrovirals available. And this little boy's courage and what he did for the face of AIDS in his very short life, that will resonate with me always. And this book was written about him. And I don't read a lot of nonfiction, but it was just phenomenal.
Wow, sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
What is your go-to karaoke song? Do you have one?
Oh, yes. It's there's two. It's either I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Or it's Mr. Brightside, The Killers.
I love The Killers.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah.
But I am terrible at karaoke. I should never be allowed to sing. So really bad, really bad. But I do enjoy it after a few glasses of wine.
Sure. Oh, yeah. You got to have a few glasses yeah. Yeah, first. Yeah. And by a few, you mean 10 or 11. Okay.
Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's so funny. What is your favorite procrastination activity?
It's probably social media.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
terrible because yeah. I'll be busy writing something and I'm finding that as I'm getting older, my synapses are not firing as they were. So
it's terrible.
I'll sit and I'll go, what is the word for this? Oh, come on, it's when it's like, oh, and I've just remembered a word that I asked my husband earlier. I was saying, what is something that gets thrown? And I was going, is it a trajectory? No, no, no. And now I've just realized
projectile.
It's a projectile.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you guys are amazing. I should speak to you every time I word.
Please.
But I'll sit and I'll Google what the word is, and then I'll get sidetracked by social media, and then I'll see stupid comments, and then I'll comment on them, and probably social media.
Yeah, it's a big hole.
Yeah, energy suck. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yes.
What is a favorite meal of yours?
A toasted cheese sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just a really, really good toasted cheese. It's got bread. It's got the melted cheese. Yeah. It's all good.
A little bit of butter.
What kind of cheese you put on that?
Oh, very strong cheddar, very aged cheddar. Ooh. But then I'd also put mayonnaise on it, and I know not everybody would agree with me there.
Yeah, I might not do that.
I might go with that.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to go with mayonnaise on there, I got to put some tomato on there, too, for a little buffer.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And maybe some bacon.
Yeah.
I mean, the sandwich is getting big now. But
it is getting big now.
Yeah. And it's essence of toasted cheese.
Yeah, it's nice. A really good one.
Nice.
And last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I am currently busy reading this amazing book called, hold on, it is From the Ashes. It is by Jesse Thistle. Mm-hmm. It is a top reading Canada. It's a contender for Canada Reads.
Hey.
Where, the whole country debates which books they're going to read.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's about his story of being a First Nations Métis, being homeless and finding his way, in the world. And it's just amazing. And I actually get to interview him at the end of the month, which I'm really, really looking forward to.
Oh,
awesome.
That's
very good. That's very great. Exciting. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, it's been a lot of fun chatting with you. We really appreciate you taking some time. Again, absolutely loved your book. If you want to make God laugh, so, so good. It's moving, it's touching, it's poignant. I think it's a great story. And, everybody should read it.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate it. And it's been so lovely chatting with you.
It's been great chatting with you as well.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye.
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 Bye. The Inside Flap.
All right, there you go. Told you she was a lot of fun, mm-hmm. and she really was. So,
expect a person who writes a tragic kind of book
I wouldn't expect one thing.
I thought she'd be serious.
And yeah.
No, and she wasn't. Uh-uh. Yeah, she was really a delight.
She came to play.
Yeah.
Yep, and the name of that book again is If You Want to Make God Laugh. Check it out now. All right, let's get to it. Time to open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Laura, what do you have this week?
I have a book called Mexican Gothic by Sylvia Moreno Garcia.
Mm-hmm. You beat me to it. I wanted to read this book, and you got your grubby little hands on it first.
I had it on my library list forever. Yes, you did. Yes. And I said Garcia when I meant Garcia. By the way, it's Sylvia Moreno Garcia.
Okay.
So this is Jane Eyre crossed with A.S. Byatt. It's set in 1950s Mexico, and this has a classic setup. A young woman is sent to a small mountain village to check in with her cousin who's ill, and uh-huh. her cousin is newly married to a handsome Englishman in Mexico. She sent her family a mysterious letter talking about a mysterious doom, and so her cousin Naomi travels to their odd Victorian mansion called High Place, where the servants are silent, dinners are silent. There's a creepy mist always enveloping the home, and things aren't at all in any way, shape, or fashion normal. So, you know, I love the setup where you've got the young woman who travels to the creepy house, and there's usually relatives involved,
yes.
and they're silent, and you're not sure what's going on, and you don't know how to behave or why people are acting this way. It's a great setup. And the main character, Naomi, is an interesting person. She's smart. She's educated. She's a bit of a party girl who likes to smoke, dance, and flirt, and gamble. And honestly, at first I didn't like her, but I quickly started to identify with her as it became all too clear to me that she was the only normal person in this house. So I was like, Laura, you need to identify with this one. This is a book where you just want to shake her a bit and say, get out.
That's right.
But it is a novel, and she is also there to try to help her cousin. So the atmosphere that this book created was intense. I felt like I was at this house high up in a mining town. Mm. It's a place where you're shrouded in fog almost all the time. And I do think there's something about places that are foggy. There's a strangeness to walking around outside. You really can't see anything until you're right up on it, really. And it's kind of startling.
Thick as pea soup.
It's odd. I mean, we live in such a beautiful, sunny, dry climate that when we travel to the Pacific Northwest and places like that where there is a lot of fog.
It's really disconcerting.
It's odd. Yeah. It's an odd feeling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this writer captures that creepy, off feeling of being in a damp, foggy place. And the atmosphere in this book really is one of my favorite things about it. So if you think about gothic novels, atmosphere is something that's really important.
Yes.
Like Mr. Rochester's house in Jane Eyre, the windswept moors, Dracula's castle. They're all...
I bet you read that book every year. I bet you just love that Mr. Darcy. Mm.
That is not a gothic novel. That is romantic fiction.
Okay.
No, not a gothic. Sorry, Dave. I bet you just haven't ever read that.
Nope.
Okay. Dracula's Castle. Like Dracula.
Oh, yes, yes.
Jane Eyre. Daphne Demure. Yeah. Heathcliff.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Moors.
The Moors, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything spooky. And so that atmosphere is really important to a gothic. So this book wrapped me in this world, and I was really sorry when this book ended. I absolutely loved it.
Were you in a puddle of tears also when this book ended?
No, I was not in a puddle of tears.
No.
Okay, good. No. You were in a puddle of tears?
Well, at the end of,
Your book.
If you want to make God laugh, yes.
I gotcha. No, I was just sad that this book ended. If you like a gothic novel, I love a gothic novel. This is classic. There's a crazy twist in it that I thought was fantastic.
Ooh. The twist.
Very, what would I say? Like, educated. Interesting twist that I did not see coming that was really interesting to me.
Hmm.
It's called Mexican Gothic by Sylvia Moreno Garcia.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely amazing. I can't wait to read it myself. Now, you know, Andrew and I, growing up, we were lucky enough that we would actually have school delayed for fog.
Oh, really? Fog delays.
Yep.
Wow.
And it was
coming off the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah, and there were car accidents of kids going to school. So, you know, it was probably like a 30-mile trip to school for us.
Wow. Right? Really?
Because there was one high school.
Yeah, we were on Kent Island, and then we had to get up to Centerville, Maryland.
My bus ride
was over in the afternoons, was over an hour. I was the last one off the bus. So it was over an hour on the school bus.
That's a nightmare.
Ours was like 2 hours. We were the last stop in the morning, and we were the last stop in the afternoon. So we paid for it. But, you know, it was the only high school in the county back then.
The only one.
And so basically, you know, for 30 or 50 miles in any direction, it's the only high school.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So pretty diverse school too, really, when you go back to it.
You're all getting bused to a central location. So there you go.
But the fog was so bad, but there were car accidents and things like that, because, you know, tractor trailers are still going.
What do you know about car accidents?
Yeah. They're still going like 70 miles an hour.
In the fog.
And they can't see.
Yeah, they can't see someone stopped up ahead.
And it was thick sometimes. I mean, sometimes.
It just socked in.
You really couldn't see 5 or 10 feet.
Fog is strange, though, because it also does funny things with sound. Sound is different.
You never get socked in from the snow, but you can get socked in from the fog.
I think it's socked in as fog.
You only get socked in from
like the
fog.
Like the Bay Area is what I think of when I think of socked in.
And I've been lost in the fog on the water before, too.
Ooh.
Running out of gas, right? And this is a place that I knew extremely well, a body of water, right? I mean, we knew extremely, but, you know, the fog rolls in.
You can't tell.
That is scary.
And Andrew never learned how to read a compass. Yeah. So.
And this is before cell phones, right? So we couldn't just pull a GPS up to basically see where we were.
Wow.
But we
set off flares and hope someone would come and rescue.
But, you know, you've been lost in fog and stuff like that. I mean, and it's, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's Dave and I think we have it. Entrenched in us a little bit of fear of the fog.
The fear of the fog. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in this house too, there's a fog that's just almost always there.
Mm.
Yeah, and it just doesn't lift. You know, one of those types of places. Yeah. It's creepy because you can't tell. Like, is that a figure?
Right.
What is that over there? You know, and then the sound sounds different. And you're not sure where the sound is coming from.
Yeah.
There's ravines in this area because it's a high mountain town in Mexico, outside of Mexico City. And you don't want to fall down one of those, but you can't see things until you're like right there.
And if you ever looked out in the mountains and seen the fog like rolling in, it almost seems alive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's flowing across the landscape. It's reaching out.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is pretty spooky.
Yeah, when we stayed in Carmel, California, you could really see it there. It got really thick there.
That's what I was picturing, because there's cliffs on the edge of the water there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So I was picturing, it was Half Moon Bay, and I was picturing, you walk up to that, and you can't tell, but it's a sheer, you know, 200-foot drop-off.
I was thinking of those delicious chocolate caramels. I had one earlier today. That's why I
got confused. Well, Carmel is pretty.
Yep. All right. We'll definitely be checking that book out, and I'll be stealing that one off your Kindle for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, my book this week.
Dave Medicus.
So speaking of forces of nature, the book that I'm recommending is called, it's almost like we planned this.
Oh.
It's called The Elementals.
Hmm.
And this is written by Michael McDowell. There's a guy who's no longer with us, but he wrote the screenplays for The Nightmare Before Christmas and Beetlejuice.
I know Andrew's
a big fan of Peter's.
The family in general loves that movie.
And yeah. So this is the guy who wrote the script for it.
Beetlejuice is a great movie.
Mm-hmm. So this novel is actually an oldie, but a goodie from 1981.
Hell, it is an oldie.
I think like a lot of hardcore horror fans of the horror genre, they know this book. I think it's somewhat considered a little bit of a cult classic. And
it's on lists.
Yes, I've seen it on a lot of lists.
I've seen it on lists.
Quote, best of horror lists. And yet I don't think a lot of people actually know this book. So that's why I decided to talk about it. That and the fact I just read it. And that and the fact is a great summer read, because there's a lot of sand in this book. So if you would go to the beach and you really want to immerse yourself in a sandy experience, hence the name of the book, think the name of the book, The Elementals, this is the book for you. This is Ozymandias meets The Haunting of Hill House. And this, like I said, a great summertime beach read.
Who's Ozymandias?
Oh, you know the poem... I think a lot of people now know Ozymandias because of the Breaking Bad. There's a famous Breaking Bad episode.
I've never seen Breaking Bad.
But no, you clearly were not paying attention in high school English class. Ozymandias is a poem by Percy Bysshe Shelley.
Oh, Shelley.
About, you know, the things that remain in the desert over time, and as the time just wears down these things, and Ozymandias is still standing.
You know what? I don't think I was smart enough to be in that class, so that was not taught to me.
Andrew, do you remember this poem? It's a very short poem.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, Dave.
Do yeah. you really?
No, yeah, no, I don't.
Thank you.
Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies. And then it goes on and on and on. But it's basically about this decay. And this
oh, that
ruin.
Poem.
My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair.
I'm not very educated, no, Dave. I don't know. No, I don't
right.
know.
Well, first, you guys need to go read Ozymandias.
Okay.
Listeners, I'm sure.
So what does that have educated. To do with Breaking Bad?
What was the name of one of the episodes?
Really?
Yeah. Because he's like Ozymandias. Look on my works and despair. You know,
okay.
We're still here.
Huh.
There's also a comic book character, Ozymandias.
Huh.
Have you ever seen the movie The Watchmen?
Hmm.
Which is which is a different take. I love that movie, but it's a different take on. It's sort of a dystopic, you know, hero comic book show.
Yeah.
But Ozymandias is one of the characters in that.
Breaking Bad. Superhero films and Shelley poems.
So yeah, well, it's like about it's
three his, things I don't know.
This guy is trying to build himself a statue of himself and trying to say that he's going to be here for eternity, but nothing lasts forever.
I gotcha. You know,
the sand is going to wear him down. Okay. If you're looking for something with a good dose of horror, humor, and eccentric Southern characters, this is the book for you. However, that beach read comes with a caveat. Just like Jaws taught us it wasn't safe to go in the water, the Elementals teaches us that it just might not be safe to lie on a sandy beach. It is very sandy, and as everyone knows about sand, it gets everywhere. It gets in your shoes, your hair, your ears. It gets in the house, and it really,
like Christmas needles.
Gets in your house. That's just like... It's like Christmas.
We're
finding Christmas.
Hey, I just linked your book and my book.
Yes.
With another great book, The House of Sand and Fog.
Oh, wow. Well done. Good job.
Thank you.
How about that?
Totally redeemed myself.
Mm-hmm. Check out the big brain on Paramedicus.
This book opens with a family member who stabs their dead mother in the casket at her funeral, and no one bats an eye because, as everyone knows, this is to ensure that the dead do not get buried alive. So it's like a little ritual. But yeah, I just thought that's just such a clever way of opening up a book and letting you know what you're in for. Expect the unexpected. And that's just the beginning of this book. There are two main Southern families in this book, the Savage family and the McRae family, and both families spend their summers on a small island on the Gulf Coast of Alabama. However, there are three Victorian mansions there, two for the two families, and the third one sits empty.
This sounds like a gothic, Dave.
Yeah, it kind of is. This third house is undisturbed for years. And when one girl who's never been to the island starts poking around the third house, that's when things start to go off the rails. These are eccentric, colorful characters full of delicious Southern idioms and charm. The horror factor is always nearby and creeps in more and more as the book goes along. The family dynamics at play highlight the wide range of emotions that are found and seen in any family. And when that sand comes for you, watch out. The sand is always nearby. Eccentric characters, interesting family dynamics,
mm-hmm.
really good. Anyway,
yeah.
It's called The Elementals by Michael McDowell, and check that one out. All right, Andrew.
Andrew Dowd.
What do you got for us
so,
this week?
I've got a different book, and please do not look up this book.
Okay.
I want you to try and guess
okay.
it. Guess, oh. guess at the author.
Okay.
And so,
guessing oh. game.
L.E. Medesit Jr.
No. So in any case, researching for a book this week, and a lot of the science fiction, a lot of the fantasy is fairly formulaic.
Sure.
So I wanted to look, you know, and science,
a lot of the books
science
I read,
fiction,
a lot of the books I read, you know, are too.
You get an ancient spaceship, you know, you've got, you're flying around the universe.
Yeah. Formulas work.
Space
That's
wars.
Why formula,
yeah.
Right?
We yeah. I mean, formulas. I just read a gothic, which is a certain type of book. Yeah.
But, you know, I was in the mood for something different, something refreshing. And so after a long search, I came across a book called The Wizard's Butler. Right? And you know, it's an interesting title, and I would say...
I'm dying to look this up. I'm not...
It's not as if the book grabbed me, but it stood out, right? I mean, you know, you've got books on, you know, fantasy books, you got, you know, spaceship books, but then you've got The Wizard's Butler. So I'm like, let me take a look at that.
I didn't know wizards were allowed to have butlers.
Well,
they're pretty important. A wizard would be.
Yeah, but so a wizard can just like say, like, I dream of Jeannie, twinkle her nose and the dishes get done, right? Yeah, that kind of deal.
And so the book features Roger Mulligan. Roger Mulligan is a veteran. He has done three...
Oh, I thought we were going to get to the guessing game. I guess not.
We'll get there.
Oh, we're getting there.
There's three tours of duty in Afghanistan. And so he survived Afghanistan. So he's a decorated veteran.
So this is set in present day.
It's set... Well, you know, I guess it's present day, yeah. And then he is an EMT in New York City. But he's just recently been fired from his job because he went to pick up a patient who is a woman... who'd been beaten near to death by her abusive husband. And Roger could not stand by. And so he basically...
Oh, retribution.
He basically, you know, beat the guy up.
Right.
You know, I guess the guy was probably mouthing off him or whatever. And he couldn't hold back after seeing the damage that he had done to his wife. So that's the kind of guy Roger is. And so he is on the search for his next job.
Vengeful.
And so he sees a, you know, a job as a caretaker... of a house and I guess a person. And so he shows up at this, you know, this old Gothic mansion in New York.
Huh.
And you know, and he answers the door. Now, I know I'm going to enjoy the book when in the first chapter, the book is referring to the décolletage.
Oh, Angela is a big fan of the décolletage.
Yes, I love, and I love the word. I love what it refers to.
All I think of with the word décolletage is the Seinfeld. Yeah. Where
quite the décolletage for a suffragette.
Thank you, Dave.
Juliette Lewis.
Well, and so the thing is, I missed out on the whole
Juliette Lewis.
The Julia Louis Dreyfus.
Yeah. I missed out on the whole Seinfeld thing. But I,
what?
Yeah, because I was overseas. I was overseas. I was gone that decade. I was not living in the U.S. But the thing is, I can't tell you how many Seinfeld episodes I myself have created. Right, I mean, I don't know about this Seinfeld décolletage episode.
I don't know that many people remember that. I don't know why, but that line sticks out.
Listeners,
it wasn't
let us know.
Like a lot of Seinfeld had like water cooler stuff the next day.
That's true.
This one wouldn't have been a water cooler talk. It just stuck out because it's a great word. Décolletage is a great sounding word.
Message us if you remember a décolletage. TheInsideFlap.com.
Yeah. So, and I'm saving that for retirement. I want to just go and binge watch all the episodes of Seinfeld. Yeah. So. And anyways, as Roger's walking up to this house, he sees this house. He basically can think of old wealth, right? So he gets the sense that this house has been here for a long time, right? And it is, you know, and based on the book, it is the oldest occupied residence in New York City, right? Because the family that's lived there has lived there for hundreds of years. And so the last remaining heir to this family is basically living there. So he goes and knocks on the door. And the niece of the old man that lives there, her name is also Naomi, and so it's Naomi Patching and her husband Thomas, and so they basically want Roger to take over and be the caretaker of the house and the butler of really one of the main characters of the book, who is the old guy. His name is Joseph Shackelford, and so you know, and so the premise is, and so they're talking to him, and he's like, well. You know, why are you interested in me in this, right? I mean, a former veteran, he's an EMT, and they want him to take care of this house and this old guy. He's like, well, you know, his butler who has been with him for decades died, and everybody we've tried to replace him with, right, has not lasted. And so they're willing to pay him $5,000 a month, and if he can last a year as a butler... As a little incentive, they're offering him $1 million.
Ooh, that's a good premise.
Yeah.
And so not only...
That's a bingo.
And not only do they put it in writing, but they let him take the contract to his attorney and rewrite the contracts to the Senate. So they're desperate to find somebody that can take care of the House and take care of Joseph as well. And so, you know, Roger obviously, you know, he has a strong moral compass. And he's like, well, you know, before I accept the job, let me meet with Joseph and let me see, you know, let me meet him first. If he doesn't like me, there's no point in me taking the job. And so basically, he goes into the study where Joseph is. And Joseph is there as this decrepit old man in a wheelchair. And then, you know, he basically tells his niece, Naomi, leave me alone with him for a few minutes and whatever. And so as soon as Naomi leaves, Joseph throws off the act because he's playing this. He wants to play this decrepit old man. Now, he is old. He's like 80 years old or something like that. So he is old. But he's playing this decrepit, senile old man to kind of fool his niece.
Gotcha.
Uh-huh.
To play along. And so... you know, Roger and Joseph have, you know, they're both very honest and straightforward. And, you know, and Roger has immediate respect for Joseph. And he can see there's more to this guy than meets the eye. And so Joseph, of course, tells him, I'm a wizard.
Hmm.
You know, and then, you know, so Roger decides, well, I'm going to give it a try. And so on the way out the door closes by itself. Right, which is the first kind of inkling that this guy may indeed actually be a wizard.
Hmm.
Now, what I like about this book is...
Could be drafty.
Yeah. Well, you don't know. You find out later. But what I like is you've got science fiction or fantasy books where the magic is the premise of the book.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the case here, right? And so the magic is there. And they weave the magic into our world, so where the magic is just there, and it's just part of the story. It's not the driver of the story, right? It's just, you know, it's just paint on the walls.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It's part of the story, and I like that, right? Because it makes it very believable. Right?
I was going to say it makes it seem like it might be true.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so, of course, Roger takes the job, you know, and of course, you know, things start to unfold. And so he finds out that the niece and her husband are not really very nice people. And their goal is they're trying to
get the money.
They're trying to get the money, and they're trying to basically get Joseph declared incompetent.
Oh, man.
So that, because basically the property that he owns, right, is mm-hmm. is almost almost an entire block in New York City.
Wow.
No.
And so... it's worth a lot of money. And so she wants to basically take this property and redevelop it. So Joseph is also somebody who you really like as well. You really like him, and he's honest. He's down to earth. I mean, he's a wizard, but again, it does not inundate the story, right? As far as him being a wizard and as far as there being magic. And so there's always a sense of mystery. Like, for example, how is it that this house stays as clean as it does when there's no staff to clean it?
Mm.
You know, who's doing the cleaning?
Ah, that's sounds
like our house.
Yeah. And I wish I could. I wish I could have some of those magic creatures that are in this book.
Oh, cool!
That basically do some of those things.
It's not Dobby, is it?
Maybe.
Ooh, a house elf.
Well, no elves in this book. But and so, you know, the thing with Joseph is he really is his goal. Is he wants to save the Shackelford house.
Hmm.
Because the house is a place of magic, and there's magical creatures that live in
this
house.
That's cool.
And so his goal is he wants to find an heir of his that actually has a sense of magic, because he needs that to preserve the house. So he's not worried about saving his own life. His goal is, how do I preserve Shackelford house? And it's nice too, because, you know, Roger's not falling into the role of an apprentice, right? So many of these books are, you know,
a lot of apprentices.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically is to learn magic. But that's not Roger's role at all. And so Roger has lived this life where he's fought in wars. He's been an EMT, so high-stress job. So here he is as a butler. And so he gets a butler outfit. Somebody gives him a butler book that has apparently all the information he needs. He puts himself into cooking. He puts himself into taking care of the house, into taking care of Joseph. So he really, this being a butler really suits him. It calms him.
He had to sit down and watch the remains of the day.
No, that did not happen.
Upstairs, downstairs.
Yeah, did not happen in the book. And so he really embraces being a butler. Mm. The politeness, the bowing, mm-hmm. Taking care of guests, serving them tea, and even his parents. And so Roger is still in touch with his parents, and he goes home to see his mom and his dad, and they just mention, how much at peace he seems, with that. Mm. And so it's this book where you have, these two main characters that find each other, right? And they end up, nurturing each other, helping each other. And, of course, Joseph is helping Roger just as much as Roger is helping Joseph. And so that's what I love about this story is it's realistic. It is not far-fetched in terms of the magic. It is very detailed. You care about the characters. You care about their fight to save Shackelford Manor. Hmm. I just love this book. So here's the question.
Hmm.
Yes. Oh, here we go.
Who do you think is the author of this book?
I'm going to say LeBron James. No.
I'm going to need more clues. I need more clues. Am I going to get a multiple guess? No.
George R. R. Martin.
Close.
Mm.
But and I will say is
what is close
the
to
author
George
of this
R. R.
book?
Hang on. Samuel. Wait, Clemens. Wait. Is it somebody I would know, Andrew?
Well, you would know because I've reviewed some of his books before.
Does he live in Colorado?
He does live
in
Colorado.
Okay, you haven't read everything I've written.
Yeah.
We've got him right here.
Nathan
okay,
Lowell.
You haven't read everything I've written.
Oh, now you've read everything he's written.
So Nathan, thank you for another great book.
Awesome.
There we
go. Thank you for a refreshing premise.
There we go.
In the fantasy genre.
This is episode 85, and we've done probably about 20 inside chats, and Nathan Lowell was our very first guest. So
yeah.
nice to bring it back to Nathan Lowell.
Yeah.
And so the book is The Wizard's Butler.
Okay, you haven't read everything I've written.
And so the book is The Wizard's Butler.
The Wizard's Butler, recommended by...
By Nathan Lowell.
Okay, you haven't read everything I've written.
Nathan Lowell.
Well, Nathan, I'm trying. I'm
yeah.
Doing my damnedest to read everything.
You are.
That's right. All right, excellent. All right, time now for our... Audiobook of the week, and our audiobook of the week is going to be by
Laura Medicus.
Back to Laura.
Yeah. The Gender Game by Bella Forrest. Mm-hmm. And this is a YA dystopian novel.
That means beautiful woods.
Oh, yeah, it does, doesn't it? You know, it's funny. I said it, and I thought, gosh, I meant to look this writer up because it's such a... Bella. I mean, I'm sure it's a nom de plume.
Yes.
But I didn't look it up to really understand, if she writes under another name or anything like that.
Who's got the time to do research?
I haven't had that.
We've been on the road.
Yes, I've been vacationing.
Bella.
I've been busy having been yelled at to engage my core while I'm sweating.
Engage your core!
Stumbling, squinting, pushing my glasses back up. Yeah.
That kind of hike is great for your core, though.
I wasn't sore.
I can't stress that enough.
I did not feel like I could engage my core. Couldn't see my core, also. Could feel my core jiggling around, though.
Couldn't see it.
Not with my trifocals on, Dave. So this is a book that Sylvia, our teenage daughter, asked me to read.
Yes.
She, when your kid really gets into a series of books or really gets into reading, of course, as a parent, you get excited about it, especially if your kid, she's a hot and cold reader.
Goes on and on.
She'll go through periods of time where it's really hard to get her to read a book. Yep. And then there's other periods of time where she cannot, please go to bed.
Fits and peaks.
It's 3 a.m, stop reading.
Yeah.
So she's one of those kids. And this series is a series of books, has captured her. She wants to talk about it with me. That's all she wants to talk about, really. Yeah. I would say, Dave. Like, you heard long.
Oh yeah, she kept. Yeah, what's happening now? What's going on?
What do you
on
think's
now?
Gonna happen? Yeah, that's her most happen? Favorite question. My like least this, favorite but... question. Yeah. So I
don't know. They're all gonna die. I don't know.
So I listened to it.
Yep.
And it's fantastic. So this author has created a world where men rule and live in the West, in a country called Patras, and women rule and live in the East. in a country called Matras, which I accidentally kept calling Mattress and getting yelled at by Sylvia.
Hey, we're going to go to the mattresses.
So this is a world that is fairly toxic to humans outside of these two strongholds. The river that divides them is poisonous. The areas surrounding the two countries are wastelands that are fairly deadly to humans. So this is a book about a young woman named Violet. She's sent on a secret mission to the male-dominated side of the world to recover an object of great importance to the female side. There's a lot of really fun spy stuff in here with Violet. There are fantastic fight scenes, chase scenes with motorcycles. Ooh. There's a motorcycle helicopter that's in here.
A motorcycle helicopter.
There's cool triangular pyramid buildings on the male side of stuff. There's double agent stuff. She gets to cross dress. It's very exciting. There's a little bit of romance also in here. This is a writer who excels at writing action. So it starts out a little bit slow, but you will quickly get thrown into what feels like a very fun action movie. I could picture it with just a kick-ass heroine.
Awesome.
Yeah, so this is called The Gender Game by Bella Forrest. This is a series. I've already actually read the second book.
That's right.
Sylvia's on the fourth. It's written with cliffhangers, so you're just going to want to move right from one into the other. Really good. And it also, another thing I liked about it, doesn't get bogged down with like male versus female. Really, it's just a fun story. It's here I am now, entertain me kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And really good. You can listen to it with your kid on a car ride or kids.
I couldn't get you to stop listening. I was trying to talk to you. You weren't listening. I don't think that was any different from
it. Yeah. The only thing, there's some violence in it. So, you know, but I mean, at this point in life, I'm sure your child has experienced violence on television. So.
All right, let's take a listen to a clip. This is The Gender Game by Bella Forrest, read by Rebecca Solar and Zachary Weber.
I had no idea why it was called Marymount. There were no mounts around here, or anywhere in the flat land of Matris. Mountains were a luxury enjoyed only by our neighbors in Patris. And nothing about this towering brick building or the shriveled brown fields that surrounded it could be described as Mary. But I ought to start getting used to it. This was to be my residence for the next 2 years, assuming I behaved myself. This would be my third home, if a detention facility could be called that, in 5 years. A textiles factory deep in the countryside, about 20 miles from here, had been my first, and a sewage plant on the other side of the city, by Vale River, had been my second. A flour mill certainly beat the latter.
There you go. So check that one out. That is your audiobook of the week. And that is our show for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Big shout out. And thank you to Bianca Maris for joining us. And we'll see you again next week for episode 86. My name is Dave Medicus. See you then.
Adios.
Man never legislates, but destinies and accidents happening in all sorts of ways legislate in all sorts of ways. Plato.
Engage your core. Engage your core.